Hi, this is Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, telling you to stay tuned to WNJC 1360 AM for Thursday in the Doghouse, coming right up.
Mama was a mutt, Daddy was one too. Me, I'm a little bit of everything, everything that I use. One day I'm walking down my block.
Good morning. Welcome to Thursday in the Doghouse. This is Karen Fazio. I'm the dog super nanny.
And I'm Rini Primeza, the Jersey dog trainer.
Thursday in the Doghouse comes to you weekly, every Thursday morning from 10 to 10:30 and at 1360 AM WNJC. And the show is all about your favorite companion pet, the dog. This week we had planned on speaking with Dr. Ian Dunbar, who is the founder of Association of Pet Dog Trainers, and the author of several books, including How to Teach an Old Dog New Tricks. And after you get your puppy, we're trying to get him on the line right now, but what we're going to do is we're going to take a short break, so that Rini could share some of the information that she has and some of the services that she offers in the South Jersey area as a professional dog trainer and certified behavior consultant.
Is your dog always in the doghouse? Does he greet people by jumping all over them? Does she chew your shoes and steal your undies? Guess what? Your dog needs training. Hi, I'm Rini Primeza, the Jersey dog trainer, and I train dogs using only positive-based methods. My services include private training right in your own home. I also offer group puppy kindergarten classes starting at 8 weeks of age and group classes for adolescent and adult dogs beginning at 5 months of age. All group classes are held at Dog Days Camp for Canines, 23 West Main Street, Marlton, New Jersey. For more information, please contact me at 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Again, that's 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to Thursday in the Doghouse. This is Karen Fazio, the dog super nanny, and I'm here with Rini Primeza, the Jersey dog trainer, and we're going to be speaking with Dr. Ian Dunbar, who is the founder of the Association of Pet Dog Trainers and the author of several books, including How to Teach an Old Dog New Tricks, After You Get Your Puppy, Before You Get Your Puppy, and he's also the founder of DogStarDaily.com, a website completely devoted to dog training and behavior. Are we on the phone with Dr. Ian Dunbar?
He's trying to connect him now, yes.
Okay, great.
In about another minute.
Before we speak with Dr. Dunbar, I just wanted to let everyone know that he will be in the New York area on June 22nd, 23rd, and 24th in Flushing, New York. And the seminars that he is offering right now are a little bit different than the ones that he's offered in the past. So if you have never even heard of Dr. Ian Dunbar or you've attended several of his seminars in the past, this is going to be a little bit different, because one of the topics that he's going to touch upon is punishment. And it's not physical and it's not scary, but it's something that's lacking in dog training today. And he's going to teach you how to do it appropriately. And I want you to know that you can register for any of the seminars by going to jamesandkenneth.com. That's the website that has Dr. Ian Dunbar's book, and there you can register for the seminar. Is Dr. Ian Dunbar on the line?
Oh, we're going to put you on hold for a minute, Karen, and then we're going to get Dr. Dunbar on.
Okay.
Pat's doing his best here to get us all connected.
Okay.
All right, so... All right, Dr. Dunbar, do we have you on?
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Morning.
Thank you so much for joining us here in the doghouse today. We've tried to get you before, and I'm so glad that we were able to schedule you for today. We're looking very much forward to talking with you. And so Karen introduced you a little bit, and so we know that you are the creator of the Association of Pet Dog Trainers, which is a group that both Karen and I are active members of, and I thank you very much for that. And you have been on the the page for positive reinforcement dog training. Am I correct?
That is true.
Okay. And so, you know, I believe that Karen and you agreed that we were going to talk about the proper way to punish, and I'd be very interested to hear what you have to say about that. So get started. So can you give us a little information about what would you determine as being the best way to punish a dog?
Well, probably no way at all.
Okay.
It's actually a little more exciting than that, that we have to teach owners how to inhibit undesirable behaviors in their dogs. You know, when dogs do things that upset them or they don't like, we must teach owners, you know, so that they can stop the dog doing this. But that's not actually sufficient. I mean, punishment, and by punishment I use like a scientific definition, which means a stimulus that's going to inhibit the immediately preceding behavior such that it's less likely to occur in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But we actually want to do a lot more than that in education, you know, whether we're teaching a dog or we're teaching a horse or a person. So, you know, if we go back and we look at the whole, you know, learning theory thing, that feedback, you know, the consequences of a dog's behavior should be binary. If he gets it right, we reward him. If he gets it wrong, we punish him. Now, the reward bit is absolutely pure and simple and wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Dog got it right, so you say thank you. So he's going to get it right more times in the future. But the notion of punishment, we don't just want to inhibit the behavior, because what will happen there is if we keep doing it frequently, we're going to eventually inhibit the dog from acting like a dog. And you end up with these poor dogs, you know, with no excitement, their heads are down, their tails, you know, between their legs, their ears are flat. And this is one of the big dangers of any type of punishment when it's in any way aversive.
Okay.
Yes, you get rid of the behavior, but now the dog's pretty down and depressed. So, you know, it occurred to me, this has only been the last 3 years, actually, in these seminars, that we want to actually accomplish three things when a dog does something wrong. We want to communicate three things. One, what you're doing is not what we want. But more importantly, here's what you should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then three, the potential danger of non-compliance. Well, we can do this quite easily using our voice and not having to raise it. And for example, if the dog is chewing on the furniture, you say, chew toy, get your chew toy. And he knows, oh, they don't want me to chew on the furniture, they want me to get my chew toy. Okay. And when he gets his chew toy, you praise him.
Mm-hmm.
If he's about to jump up, you would say, sit. If he's about to pee on the carpet, you would say, outside. And this is very, very simple, and this is what I used to teach, 30 years ago when, you know, I started or created puppy classes. And we were so close, except back then, I used to shout the word. So if a dog's about to jump up, I would say, sit! And thinking that the volume was necessary, but what we found now is you actually don't have to raise your voice at all.
Mm-hmm.
You simply have to be insistent. And I think this is really huge. I think it's a massive sort of cutting-edge advance, which means we don't have to be nasty to our dogs. We don't even have to be nasty to our children.
Mm-hmm.
We do have to educate them as to what they shouldn't be doing and what they should do. So it's really much bigger than simply the notion of punishment, of inhibiting undesirable behaviors, and of course it's nothing to do at all with being aversive.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why people use painful and scary stimuli is they're not using their voices. And so in order to stop the dog doing something, you actually have to be nasty.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that sets us apart, you know, in the animal world, is we have language. And I think we should use it. And I think what's happened is we've removed language from training in terms of there's very little prior instruction, so the dog doesn't know what to do. When he gets it wrong, we use all sorts of stimuli. You know, we jerk him on leash, or we shout no, or we zap him with a shock collar. And now, you know, when the dog gets it right, you know, we click or we give a treat.
Right.
And it's very pure and simple and technical in that it marks the behavior as this is what we want, but it just says you get it right. If we use our voice, of course, we can communicate not just you got it right, but how well you did. We can say, thank you, good dog, good dog. Oh, good dog. Oh, yoo-hoo. Mm-hmm. And so it's much richer in terms of feedback, and we just find that dogs learn much, much quicker.
May I ask a question, sir?
Absolutely.
My question is about the timing. You had said that if the dog is jumping up, you tell the dog to sit, and then you verbally reward the dog by praising. Or if the dog is chewing on a piece of furniture, you then talk to him about getting a chew toy. When a dog does something inappropriate, I have found that when people, for example, let's talk about puppy biting. A lot of people will, give the dog a chew toy right after the puppy has bitten them. And I have found over the last 12 years of training that I've been doing that it tends to act as a reward for the biting. I mean, so I have come to the conclusion myself that you need a little interim of time before you present the puppy with something positive. Am I totally off the wall here as far as you're concerned?
No, you're totally correct, but we're talking about an absolutely different issue now. We're not talking about, a specific redirection. What you're talking about is owners who unintentionally reward their dogs for biting.
Okay.
You know, if a dog does something wrong and you say, hey, here's a treat or a chew toy, yeah, you're rewarding it.
Mm-hmm.
So I would think, well, what is wrong with puppy biting? We know it's the number one most important behavior in puppies, that they have to bite. If mm-hmm. they don't bite as puppies, they won't have bite inhibition.
Correct.
When they bite you as adults, they'll do an awful lot of damage.
Right.
It's the most important thing that puppies learn to bite gently, and they only learn this by biting.
Mm-hmm.
And when I, did 10 years of research of watching puppies, it's the number one most frequent behavior while the pup is awake, and that means it has to be very important. And so I would think, well, problem is not that they're biting, but they're biting too hard. And this is what a teaching acquired a bite inhibition is all about. You have to teach the puppy to bite gently, and you have to teach the puppy eventually not to initiate mouthing at all.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't have a, cute little pit bull wandering up to a child and saying, hello, I want to mouth you. Their parents would freak out.
Right.
And so first we would teach gently. And so if the puppy bit too hard, I'd go, ow, gently, 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 please.
Mm-hmm.
And if the puppy didn't respond to that, I'd say, right, I'm going.
Mm-hmm.
I would just leave the puppy in his long-term confinement area for 30 seconds or a minute. Then I would come back and say, hey, do you want to make up now? Come here, sit. All right, we can start it again.
Mm-hmm.
So the biggest punishment here for any puppy, especially a vibrant one that wants to bite you, is he loses you. So that means you must be playing with the puppy in his long-term confinement area so you can leave him safely, so there's nowhere to pee, nothing to chew on,
Mm-hmm.
And they learn very, very quickly. Then biting becomes mouthing, and then we teach the puppy, mouthing's okay, but you've got to stop when I say so. So first we teach him off using toys and food. And then eventually, mouthing is fun, but it's just between you and I. You can't go up and initiate it with a stranger who doesn't know you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good answer. Karen, did you...
It's a different... So I'm not here talking about the issue of unintentionally...
No, of course not.
...undesirable behavior.
Sure.
It's being instructive when a dog does something wrong. The first question you should ask yourself is, if this is wrong, what is right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Karen, did you want to follow through with a question?
I did. You're going to be appearing in Flushing, New York on June 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. Is that correct?
That's next weekend, yeah.
That's right.
I'll try to do this one and then head home and then head back again.
Okay. Can you go over some of the topics that you'll be discussing? Because, some of us have attended several of your seminars before, but these are going to be a little bit different.
Yeah, this is a sort of compilation of everything I think is really important in dog training, but we're not doing it.
And what's
that? Half of it, I think, is cutting edge and absolutely new, and the other half is so old that it's got to be new again.
Mm-hmm.
We are not socializing puppies, and they grow up and become fearful. It's shameful. As dog
right.
professionals, we should really just be ashamed of ourselves. It's just horrible for dogs to be fearful.
Mm-hmm.
We're not teaching owners how to prevent behavior problems, so we have 3-month-old dogs that, you know, soil the house, destructively chew and bark excessively, and get you know, anxious when left at home alone. So that's the first day. It's like we simply are not raising puppies properly, and I think that dogs and dog owners really get the short end of the stick here. And the second day is about this notion of, I would say 90% of learning theory just doesn't work in practice. And we analyze, you know, all the aspects of reinforcement and punishment, and we come up with a better way, basically. It's luring dogs and then using our voice lots to communicate. And the third day is a biggie. It's largely about lure reward training that these days in classes, people are using lots and lots of food and toys, which I laugh. I mean, I was the person who kind of popularized their use in dog training 30 years ago. And dog training is certainly a friendlier place for dogs and owners, but we're not phasing these out. And so you see, you know, week six in a puppy class, mm-hmm. People are still luring with food,
right.
Or they're still clicking away with a great big food pouch on. Mm-hmm. And that to me is not training. Training is teaching a dog to respond to a verbal cue when at a distance, when distracted, and without the continued use of your training tool.
I have a technique I use, if you don't mind me interrupting. Rainey thinks I'm nuts.
Yeah.
But I wanted to throw it at you. I have a hound, an English foxhound, and she is a food, I mean, she lives for food, and she lives to scent. And when she was younger, she had a big problem with, you know, going on walks and dumpster diving into every garbage pail and just gavoning everything that she could find. And I found that, when we passed, I started to use the garbage pail as a reward for her so that I would teach her to sit and be patient, and then I would inspect the garbage. And I did it with Safe Garbage Pails. There's a deli around the corner from my house. And they throw out day-old bread in there, so there's no chemicals or anything, and I know it's safe. But we'll pass the garbage pail, and I'll ask her to sit and be patient, and I'll go through, and I'll take out a roll, and I'll hand it to her, or I'll allow her to dumpster dive on command. And I did this several times to the point where I didn't have to even talk to her anymore. When we passed the garbage pail, she would automatically go down into a lay-down position and wait patiently, whether, you know, for me to say, okay, you can have it or you can't. And there were days where she couldn't. You know, there were days when I passed the garbage pail and there was nothing edible in there. Or there were rags soaked with, you know, Windex, and it was inedible. And I said, well, not today. You know, and she didn't get it every day, but, you know, that actually made the behavior more reliable. Am I nuts?
Funnily enough, you told me this story last time I was on your show. And no, you're not nuts. I mean, you're basically talking about a very important principle that, you know, we will use, say, a piece of kibble in training as a lure, as a reward. And it's very useful to teach the dog extremely quickly, but we have to phase it out. And the lure must be out of your hand in the very first training session,
mm-hmm.
and in your pocket, so that now you're only using food as a reward. And then you phase it out. And there's many ways to phase it out. And one way is very similar to what you do, as rewards, and much better rewards than any, you know, treat, is I put all of the dog's behavior problems on cue. So all the things that dogs do that normally irritate owners, like,
that's what I do.
Oh, they go crazy, they jump up, they pull on leash, they run away from you. I put these on cue, and so for my dog now, the biggest reward I could ever give him is I will chase him. And when he's really good, after a fast recall, I'll say, good boy, tag, and then he runs off and I chase him all around the park, all over the house. And periodically I stand still and say, Dune, come, and I count to three, and if he's not sitting in front of me by the time I say three, I say, game over,
mm-hmm.
I just disappear, and he hates that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, jumping up, so give us a hug, sit, pulling on leash, I used to have Malamutes, so So I would say, go on, pull, and they would pull me, and then I would say, okay, by my side. So you alternate what the dog wants to do and what you want to do. Well, now the behavior problem has become a massive reward. I mean, that's essentially what it is. What we call a behavior problem for the dog is a reward. Other big things we do, of course, is people are using much too much food now. They give the dog a piece of food for anything, and it's lost all meaning. It's kind of like, you know, when you hand in your homework at, say, you know, school, you always get A or A plus just for handing it in. And we've got to thin out the food so it's really meaningful, and people forget that when a dog does something, not getting rewarded for subpar performance is a big learning experience. You know, you learn by being rewarded, but also you learn when not being rewarded.
Mm-hmm.
For example, teaching my second Malamute, my first one was very slow, so I wanted my second one to have an extremely fast recall. So I would race her against my other dog, and I would set it up. I put them in sit stay so I could decide who's going to win the race. And I would have Phoenix win just one race out of three. And if she won, I gave her three lovely treats. And if she lost, she could sniff the treat, but I gave it to the other dog to eat it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she would win one out of three, but she loses two out of three, and she sees the prize she's lost, and we end up with a lightning fast recall. So the point is, you know, training is training the dog to do it eventually without any rewards there at all. No dumpsters, you know, no food treats, no toys, even no smiling on your face. You know, you may not be happy that day, but when you say sit, you want the dog to do it. And the dog does it because now that's what he wants to do. It is no different from, say, when you teach someone to ski or ride horseback or to play golf, that or to play the piano. In the beginning, they do it because they have to, and you have to reward them. But in the end, they do it because that's what they enjoy doing. And so that's how I look on training. It's kind of like, you know, when my wife and I learned to tango. It was excruciating at the beginning, and their instructor punished us, you know, 10 times a minute by the sense that she would verbally say, no, the other foot, Ian, the other foot. Oh, yeah, I got it, the other foot. But now we love it. We do it because we love it. And this is the notion, I think, that has gone from dog training, horse training, education, and it's such a shame. This should be a fun prospect.
Well, I'd like to take a little bit of a break, if you don't mind. Have given up my commercial in lieu of promoting the Purr and Pooch Foundation for Animals.
They're good people.
Yes. The Palazzo family of Purr and Pooch in Tinton Falls and Wall Township has founded a foundation which benefits, they provide grant money to no-kill shelters and animal welfare groups all across the country. And the money that they get helps to fund the trainers that are training these dogs that may not have been able to find homes to find their forever homes. And these are the unsung heroes that you don't see. And a lot of these shelters are very poorly funded, and they're desperate for money. So the Purr and Pooch Foundation has chosen those that are no-kill, and they can apply for grant money. And last year they provided nearly $40,000 in grants to trainers and in these rescue groups and in shelters, so that they continue their very noble job of saving our dogs. And I wanted to thank you. Because I understand that you are now a supporter of the foundation, and you have donated some books and things for our Black Tails Gala, which is going to be in Asbury Park August 9th. That's a Thursday evening. And if you wish to purchase tickets, you can go to purrandpoochfoundation.org, and that's P-U-R-R-N, pooch. Foundation.org. It's a wonderful organization, or if you just like to donate a couple of bucks, I mean, anything helps. And I wanted to thank you for supporting the foundation. And others have come on board too, such as Victoria Stillwell, Fresh Pet, and others. And your friend, your your college buddy, Dr. Nicholas Dodman, is a trustee of the organization too. So perhaps you can come out if you're not busy. But I wanted to thank you for supporting the organization.
It's just like family, isn't it? With Dickie and Nick and
I know.
It's wonderful. I would love to come out, but you know, August is the first time I get a whole month at home. Lately I only get, you know, 2 days or maximum 3 days, 4 days home between trips. And man, I've been doing this since November, and I really need to stay at home for a month.
Yeah, I wanted to pick your brain a little bit, if you don't mind. You know, recently there was another entertainment show of dog training that takes place in the New York City area. And the trainer is a little hands-on. And I just wanted you to share with our listeners what happens to a dog's brain, or what happens to his behavior when you use aversive techniques, which is things that might frighten the dog or stun him, or, you know, use physical punishments on an animal. What happens to the brain, and what happens to the learning process as a result of that?
Well, it's, you know, it's kind of a no-brainer. I mean, try it out on a person in a bar, you know, who maybe you want to move to another table. Just go up and push them around, see what happens. I mean, depending on the person, you know, they get scared, the brain shuts down, they can't learn, or you pick on the wrong person and they punch you in the face and lay you out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my philosophy to training has always been what I grew up with. I was lucky to grow up on a farm. My grandfather, a very smart guy. I mean, he left school when he was 12, but he had the smarts, and he really impressed on me that to put your hands on an animal was an earned privilege, and it's not a right. And if you think it's a right, you're going to meet your comeuppance one day, and you're going to touch the wrong animal. And so I've always trained dogs off-leash. And if a leash is there, it's only there because it has to be there legally or for safety. And so I've always trained dogs off-leash for two reasons. One, so the animal tells me when he's feeling okay for me to touch him, even to pet him. I mean, a lot of animals, when you reach to pet them, you know, they bite you. I think it's, you know, 20% of dog bites happen when an owner reaches out and touches the dog's collar. I mean, that's crazy to think that the dogs are scared of the human hand, and they're scared of the human hand that lives with them, you know, their owner's hand. I mean, you don't need the brains of Einstein to work that one out, and that's such a crying shame. But the other reason is a more sort of utilitarian one. If you touch the dog in the process of training, you've now turned training into a two-step process. Yes, the dog has learned, oh, you know, I better heel and I better sit if I'm on leash or within hand's reach. But when I'm off leash, I can do what I like. So now you've created this hell of a problem that now you've got to teach that on leash trained dog, who's essentially been trained by bullying, to now listen to you when he's off leash. Well, number one, he doesn't want to because you're a bully. And number two, you haven't developed any off leash skills. So the way I go about it is I say, okay, everybody, let your puppies off leash and now try and catch them again. We start right there. And we train the dog off-leash within the play session from the beginning. And usually week one, people are getting, you know, some semblance of control that they can call their dog, they can have him come and sit, and they can get the puppy to follow them across the room in a room with 11 other puppies and about 20 people. So, you know, I wouldn't even think of grabbing a dog in the process of training. I mean, unless it were an emergency, like if the dog were escaping and, say, you know, running out the door, I would make a grab. But
hey, Dr. Dunbar? I'm sorry, we're running out of time, and I just want to be able to share with the audience where you'll be, what times, and how they can attend your seminar.
We're at the Sheraton LaGuardia in Flushing, and it's 9:30 to 5:30, and they should register online. Go to jamesandkenneth.com or call 1-800-784-5531 and talk to my son, and he'll make sure that they're registered for the seminar.
Okay. I want to thank you so much for visiting us today.
Yes, thank you very much, Dr. Dunbar. I've attended many of your seminars, and I'm a big fan.
Thank you. It's lovely having the pleasure to chat with you both.
Okay, I hope we can do that again soon. And I wish our listeners a very good day. Take your dogs out for a walk, and we'll talk to you next week on Thursday in the Doghouse.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I'm glad you're home. Where you been? Since 2 o'clock, I've been holding it in. Grab the leash, let's go chop chop. If I don't get out soon, the cord's gonna pop. Twist and shout, ooh, I gotta go out. Now I'd love to stay and talk.